Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name's H.F. Mason. I'm General Surgeon and Chief Quality Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, welcome everyone. I'm Nirmit Kothari, internist and Associate Chief Medical Officer at Baptist Memorial Hospital, Memphis.
Well, guys, once again, thank you for being here. And today, for the second week, we have Nigel Thurlow with us. And Nigel is an expert in organizational design. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's a consultant to industries in business agility. Nigel was the first ever chief of Agile at Toyota. And today we're going to continue our conversation. Last week we talked about, what actually is value in healthcare. We touched a little bit on who the customer is in healthcare. Today we want to kind of expand on that a little bit, and we want to talk a little bit more about flow and value and how the value flows through the healthcare system. So once again, Nigel, thank you for being here.
Doctors, it's great to be here, and I appreciate you having me along. And, you know, the best way of describing me is I have an opinion.
Well, you know what they say about opinions, you know.
Yeah, I do.
Everybody has one. But Nigel, like I said, last week we talked about value and the customer, and it was really interesting because you brought some perspectives about who the customer is in healthcare that I had, and I think some of our listeners had never really talked to. But talking about value and flow, but my first question is, you know, you seem to think as flow is something nebulous. I think you mentioned it was sort of like gravity. But tell us, is flow something that can be measured, and how do you know if you're flowing or if you aren't flowing? Help us out a little bit with that.
No, that's fine. Look, I mean, flow is a construct, so it has different definitions depending on how you're looking at it. So manufacturing, we talk about one-piece flow, making lots of the same thing repeatedly and having that flow in a continuous, unimpeded sort of workflow on the production line. And in the work of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, and it took me years to learn how to say his name, he was a Hungarian-American sort of scientist, philosopher, and he talked about, he was the guy who wrote the paper on psychological flow about being in the zone, which is where sports players and even doctors, surgeons are in the flow, nurses, anybody within your healthcare, if they get really into that zone of what they're treating and how they're performing their services, then you're in the zone. Nothing else matters, just the act of doing what
you're
doing.
And that's a nice place to be in when you're operating, trust me.
Yeah, I would hasten to add that would be how I'd want all surgeons to be, just like I want all pilots to be in that zone when they're flying me somewhere. But then we get into other aspects of what we mean by flow. So we have the flow of information. And I know from the preamble from this conversation, Dr. Kothari has deep expertise in this area. So I'm excited to hear from him as we dig into this. So we have workflow, the stuff that flows from left to right, typically if you look at a process chart. And we have information flow, and typically that flows from right to left. That's how we're getting the communication back. Now, of course, information flows in multiple directions, but in simple mapping terms, the difference between a process map and a value stream map, for people who may be familiar with those terms or have heard them, is the latter, the value stream map, maps the information flows, not just the workflows, where a process map is just the workflow. Now, of course, measuring that, we can measure time. We can measure how many things are being processed in a given amount of time. We call that throughput, units per unit time. But then we start to run into challenges because, as we spoke last time, we're talking about healthcare. We're talking about a complex adaptive system. We're not talking about a system that's just simple linear causality. I poke you in the eye, it hurts. We understand that. But there's a whole bunch of actors or agents in the system, tools, technology, patients, healthcare providers, insurance companies, and a bunch of other stuff as well. And we can't predict the outcome of the system. The system is constantly evolving and changing as we intervene, as we do things, and many other outside influences as well. So the system's not predictable. So part of the challenge we've got is what parts of the system are predictable that we can standardize, that we can make repeatable, like medical protocols, and how we can measure those using units of measure that make sense, whether it's time or some other measurement. And then there are elements of the system that are not measurable with a simple time because they are complex, they're evolving, they're unpredictable. And this is when we get into the sort of the realms of what we mean by a complex problem. But essentially, there are parts of the system that are not predictable. So how do we measure those? And that's not easy. I don't have a simple answer. There's not this sort of, oh, this use this measure, use cycle time or tap time. It'll be brick, because that won't work. So then we start to have a look at, we start to have to look at the characteristics of the system and start to look at what we can simplify, measure that is predictable and the elements that aren't, and then how we account for that. How do we build the appropriate slack into the system so we're not overwhelmed? I mean, I sort of, slack in the system, by the way, means it's not a buffer in the sense of a project manager padding a project estimate. That's not what we're talking about here. Slack in manufacturing terms is having sufficient capacity to cope with an increase in demand, like a mass casualty incident, or as most people in the UK would say, a Friday night in any UK city. So there's a joke there, but the Brits will get it. So the point is this, that's the challenge with measuring flow. Now, flow, you can observe it. So I have a phrase I use all the time, which is workers imagine versus workers done. So we all imagine how stuff gets done, especially if you're not on the front line doing the work. You're observing from a report or a PowerPoint deck or some statistic or a pivot table. You're observing how you think work's getting done, but you're actually not in the works. You don't exactly know how it's getting done unless you've been a doctor or a surgeon or a nurse and you've elevated more to administrative roles. You have that understanding, but unless you're at the pointy end, the sharp end, what we call the gemba in lean terms, where the work is actually being done, the actual place, you don't actually know how work is getting done. You have a perception, you imagine how it's getting done. So the most important thing we need to do is to make work visible. Lots of ways to do that. But once we make work visible, every step of the way we do the workflow, we can start to see what is predictable, what isn't predictable, how we could measure that effectively. And then we start to understand the system that we're operating in. I'm going to pause there because I know there'll be some fantastic comments from both of you.
Hey, Nigel, that does a lot to unpack, but that is, I think you raised some really good points. And it definitely, I was taking notes because a lot of things, you know, I think it kind of jogged my thought process. I want to ask you something about the last thing you mentioned about creating visibility. So, you know, what are some of the things you've observed or experienced in a system with multiple departments involved, where oftentimes things are done in silos or people work in their silos? So you create visibility at the department level, but how do you expand it to the interdepartment level?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. Now, I mean, of course, practically, what we would do as practitioners is we would bring all the key stakeholders together into ideally in person in a physical location and spend a couple of days mapping, just literally visualizing on large walls how we do the work. And we want the key stakeholders who are at the sharp end, the pointy end, the people doing the work, not the people who manage the people doing the work, the actual people doing the work. That will be coupled with a lot of deep observations at the gemba. But I caution people who do, you know, go and see, or, you know, gemba walks, as they're often called, because there is a phrase in Japanese, genchi kenbutsu, which sounds very much like genchi genbutsu. The latter means go and observe with no assumption, get the facts and take action. That's genchi genbutsu. That's the act of going to gemba and understanding and getting facts. But the similar sounding phrase, genchi kenbutsu, is sightseeing in Japanese. And that's what a lot of people do. They go to the gemba, they walk around, they tap a few people on the shoulder and say, well done, and, you know, rah, 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 and walk away. Good luck. They don't actually spend any time to understand how the work is done. So the caution about Gemba walks, it's not a matter of somebody in a suit wandering through and waving at everybody. It's actually spending time to learn, to talk, to engage, to understand through deep observation. And there was an opportunity I had a couple of years ago, a piece of work that nearly killed me because I'm old and lazy now. I was in a manufacturing facility, actually a food processing facility, and I'd watched the line for 3 weeks, and I could see all the variation. I could see what I perceived were problems, but I couldn't really grok it. Now, in your industry, it's regulated, and people are highly skilled and trained for many years, so it's not going to work exactly like this. But I said, can I have a go? And I don't advocate giving a lean practitioner scalpels and telling them to have a go. But the point is this, that I said could have a go, and it ended up being me on the production line for an entire shift. I thought it'd be a 10-15 minute, let me have a quick play. But now I got suited and booted and trained and put on the production line, and it nearly killed me. It was the hardest physical labor I'd done in decades. I mean, the lowest paid people tend to do the hardest amount of work. And so, but doing that, I actually then experienced what I was watching, and it suddenly clicked in my head. I now knew what the problems were, and I was able to work with the people who do the work on Kaizen, continuous improvement, how to resolve some of these challenges. And I was able to bring the leaders in, and I made them, and I did something that's you know, often talked about in lean mythology, which is the Ono circle, Taichi Ono being the architect of Toyota's production system, where he drew chalk circles on the ground, 2 foot wide circles, and he made people stand in them for periods of time just to observe. Don't speak, don't do anything, just watch. And the idea was they were supposed to observe and see the problems. So I actually brought executives in, and I did that. I have photographs of me doing this. And they learn more in 20, 30 minutes by watching. And then when we stop the lines, which is almost like a biblical act to stop the lines, we had the management engage with the workers and talk to them. And they learn more in that short 1 hour period of time, that total period of time, than they'd learned in months of staring at reports and pivot tables and PowerPoint decks and status meetings. So these are the actual actions, the physical activities you have to do. Now, you have to curate that in your context because of, you know, healthcare regulations and all sorts of other things about, you know, transmission of disease and other things. But you can engage people at the workplace in the appropriate way so they can understand the challenges of doing the work. So when they're formulating strategy and rules and compliance and all this other stuff, they are more aware and they're more collaborative. There is a technique, and I give credit to Dave Snowden, a friend of mine from the complexity world, preeminent thinker in that world, called trioptychons, or a trioptychon. I think it's a made-up word, but you can Google it after. But basically, it means bringing people together from very cognitively diverse backgrounds. So let's say you went and got the CEO of the main healthcare provider, the CEO of the main insurance payer, and then somebody from a patient advocacy group, or maybe a doctor or a surgeon or a nurse, because the nurses tend to be much more at the front line day to day with the same people. And so you bring them together to examine the problems, but you're bringing that cognitive diversity from these different angles together to have that conversation with the aim of improving this thing we all refer to as flow, which is, you know, treating people faster, treating people at a lower cost because that benefits everybody, treating people with a higher patient outcome. Let's call that quality, because Dr. Mason, you're focused on quality. So these are some of the ideas of bringing that together. I'm going to pause again because I tend to talk too much.
No, I mean, no, that's great. One thing that I want to touch on and just talk about some of the challenges that we have in healthcare is, you know, you think about, you know, I always relate back to Toyota, and you think about an automobile moving through the assembly line, and you know, that product is being passed along from one station to the other. So you know, that the person who's upstream is providing value for the downstream person to do the next process. You know, in healthcare, that patient's stuck in a bed, and you have different people coming in and out of the room. And really, a lot of times, you can't really see or know what that other person has done. So we struggle with flow of information. And yes, a lot of times, you know, delivering value to that patient and to that internal customer involves the flow of information. And sometimes we're not super good at that, and we have ways that we could get better. Tell us, you know, why do we struggle with that, and what are ways that we could overcome that?
So, I mean, whenever I talk to project managers, I tell them there's the three C's of project management, and it's something I've said all my career. That's communication, communication, communication. Okay. And that leads to collaboration, of course, interdependent, because we are talking about people who are interdependent. They are necessary together to achieve the outcome. This is not siloed working. This is cross-functional, interdependent working. Even though we've got our own specialized skills, we're collaborating as a team or a group of people to ensure good patient outcomes, good results. The problem with the flow of information, and, you know, I talk to people, and this is why I mentioned first on about, you know, the workflow, the process mapping versus value stream mapping. Worse than that effect. We call it different things in Toyota, materials and information flow diagramming or analysis, but the common phrase out externally is value stream mapping, is that we're trying to understand the flow of information. And the greatest waste we find is the flow of information, because workflow, you see it, you can script it, you can standardize it to a degree with certain protocols. But the flow of information is invisible. Anything that's in a computer or anything that's verbally communicated is gone. It's invisible. Where the work is smack bang in front of you, you can see it. And so we need to look at ways. Well, how do we hand off that information? I mean, yes, can we put it in a computer? Can we have a whiteboard we're writing it on, or a digital whiteboard we're recording that so we can digitize it and use character recognition, handwriting, OCR later on to sort of put that in the medical notes? Can we have better visualization? I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, even when I used to go to hospital, I'm asthmatic, so when I used to go to hospital a lot as a kid before, you know, new therapies came out, they had great big whiteboards in the ER, and they were constantly writing the notes on the whiteboards for each of the cubicles in the ER. So there was this continuous handoff of who'd done what. And you are right, in American hospitals, lots of doctors drift in and drift out, or lots of medical care professionals drift in and drift out. Sometimes, and I'm sorry to say this, but sometimes I think it's because they can bill for a few minutes or a period of time, because I said hello to the patient, so there's an ethical thing there. But the reality of it is, as more people are drifting through and seeing the patient, especially if it's a complex case that's taking many hours, or we've got a backlog in the ER department, or maybe it's a patient who's admitted and they're in a bed, but like everything, you're overstretched, you're under-resourced. And so there has to be a way to effectively document that. Now, in my day, there used to be a chart hanging on the foot of the bed, and, you know, the old English hospital beds, metal frame things, you know, and everything, everybody who came in wrote something down. So the next person who came in would read what somebody had written down. Now, that might be, I might be being naive, but that's just basic visualization of the interaction with the patient or the case. I mean, what am I missing here? Why is that so hard?
I think one of the things, one of probably the reasons, and I agree. I mean, everyone on this call would probably say that was probably a lot more simple and in some certain extent more effective system. But I think I heard the last session as well. I think some of the things we do in healthcare is, again, who is the customer, right? The customer is not just the patient, it's also the payer. And, you know, the documentation requirement set up by either the payer, whether the overseeing agencies, whether in our case, you know, CMS, those might be playing a role in that. You know, one of the things I picked up, you mentioned few times on this call, is really the process mapping and value stream mapping, or a flow of product, or flow of in process and flow of information. And it made me think, you know, I think in our industry or our area, I often feel like we end up seeing these cues because the process flow and information flow is not aligned. It does not happen in parallel or at the same speed. And oftentimes, the process is done But the fact that it's done and whoever needs to act on that information is not aware of that for a while. And that's where the information flow. And I think you really, the way you described it, it's an invisible piece part of flow. That's the flow of information.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's what you can standardize. So if somebody communicates in some way, written or otherwise, how is that handled? How is the next person in the chain that's needed to act upon that notified, made aware of it? And these are things that you can standardize and you can define as good process or good activity to improve the flow of value. Because, you know, when I start to look at, and I know we talked about this a little bit in the preamble of this, when you start to look at a system, variation in a system, so that's, and Walter Shewitt back in the day talked about common cause and special cause variation. Variation in a system, there's a certain amount of noise, perturbation in the system that's expected, ripples, if you like. You know, the system has some variation in it. We're not sort of perfectly linear, and that's expected. And then this special cause variation, as Shewitt defined it, which is the stuff that the curveballs that hit us, the things that we don't expect, which is, you know, the peaks. If you want to talk about a log normal distribution, everything's happy and then suddenly there's a peak. So the challenge we have in a lot of organizations is that they tend to just consider all that noise, all that variation. So management demands and reporting demands and the 90% of your time you spend not treating patients, doing paperwork, that type of thing. So we've got all this extra stuff in the system. And instead of us seeing that as extreme variation or excessive or special cause variation, we consider it's just the system, it's just characteristics. But what that does then is excuse the waste, and it prevents us from focusing on Kaizen activity to improve and eliminate that waste. And it really should be incumbent on all leaders and people calling themselves leaders to relentlessly Kaizen all processes and workflows to eliminate all non-value-added activity. And then they'll throw, well, it's regulation and compliance, Nigel. And I said, yes, regulation and compliance doesn't cause you to design a bad process to comply. You do that all by yourself. So we really need to start, you know, stop blaming this and start looking at the causes of variation. And there's a theoretical equation called the Kingman equation for mathematicians out there, and I'm not, that basically says that as variation increases, utilization increases, and as utilization reaches a certain point, you get an infinite queue. So the time to process new people entering the system increases almost to an infinite limit. Now, the reality is in your system, you were already overutilized. There is nobody in the world will tell me a healthcare facility has a lack of utilization. It's always overutilized. Otherwise, you'd all be working 7-hour days and having weekends off. So the reality of it is that we're overutilized. But that utilization is exacerbated by special cause variation. And we need to, and even I would argue some common cause variation can be eliminated. Now, Shewitt said, if you want to eliminate common cause variation, you have to change the whole system. Well, that's not sort of practical, but there is a lot of noise in the system that we can eliminate to reduce the utilization of the system, therefore to increase its capacity. And that's good for everybody. More patients get treated, the insurance get to pay you more money, so the hospital administrators are happy. So it's a sort of a win-win situation if it's looked at appropriately. But we need to strive to understand how we can balance, level that system effectively. Now, it'll never be a perfectly balanced system. That's why we build slack in, because you will have incidents where, you know, depending on the seasonality of the world, flu season, for instance, COVID cases and other things that are going to cause a peak demand. And as I say, casualty incidents and that type of thing. But these are the things that we need to really focus on. And unfortunately, unless those people who are sitting in the offices making the decisions are actually coming down and understanding how the system works, that battle will always be challenging and difficult.
You know, I have a question for you, because I'm a big, huge fan of process behavior charts or statistical process control charts. And you know, we know all the rules. You know, you have a run of eight above or below the mean, or you have something above the upper or lower limits. But when you mention that some things that we think of as common cause variation may not be, how do you know what's what? I mean, how do you make that distinction?
So if something is occurring continuously, it's often seen as noise in the system, common cause. But you need to question whether or not that is something that would be an expected characteristic of the system, and we should just therefore accept it is a characteristic of the system. And that's where we get into, and this is a debate, and of course that's why you bring different partners together. That's why you get in a room together. That's why you go observe at the Gemba, because... And, you know, there's a thing in from the military world we use a lot in my work in complexity, which is called red teaming. And I didn't invent this. The US military, the Army invented this. But red teaming is a technique where the experts make a plan. And then other experts who understand the context of the plan, but didn't make the plan, attack the plan. They want to find all the holes in the plan. Now, the military do it because they don't want to bring everybody home safely. So they want to find all the gaps in the plan. But it's the same thing in you could apply that in your world. And this takes a high level of psychological safety. And that gets us into empowerment and the Andon cord metaphor. And how easy is it for somebody who's not a senior person in the organization? Is it for them to stick the hand in the air and say, stop, no. And then people listen. Critical feedback, critical thinking, examine that and then act upon it. And that's absolutely necessary in healthcare. And of course, because of the nature of the beast with healthcare and the litigious nature sometimes of it, that's a challenging thing to enable. But essentially what you want is people to come together from these diverse cognitive backgrounds and examine how you do what you do. And I often say to the question you can ask your own management, do you know how we do what we do? And I mean, really know how we do what we do. We know what we do generally, but do you know the nuts and bolts of how we actually do it, step by step, bit by bit? And the answer is invariably no. They know they're a hospital. They know they're a healthcare provider. They know we treat patients. We know we do all these things and our specialities and all that type of thing. But they don't actually know how we execute on the ground. And until you know how you do what you do, you can't improve how you do what you do. And that's really where we have to challenge what people assume is common cause variation, the noise in the system. And it may be that some of that noise is irremovable. It just is what it is because of the nature of the beast. But we have to be able to challenge that. We have to be able to put a hand in the air and call BS on that. Just as if you're in the OR and, you know, a nurse assisting the surgeon notices a problem. You expect the nurse to speak out immediately to highlight that for patient safety. And the surgeon shouldn't be offended by that, should welcome it, should thank the nurse for doing that. But it's the same in any part of any system. Anybody who notices something should be able to draw attention to it. Whether or not it's valid or invalid is not the point. To draw attention to it, so we examine that critically and we can take a decision on that. And that comes again to leadership and the attitude of leadership and the culture they allow to emerge, because you can't create a culture. A culture emerges depending how we act and behave towards each other and the work. And so we have to enable a culture that allows a high level or a high degree of psychological safety, the ability to say no, the ability to point out things. And we can foster that by bringing together these diverse groups in activity and exercises to truly examine how we do what we do. Dr. Kattari, I can see you're itching to reply.
No, I think that was really good when you said how we do what we do. And I was in my mind trying to think what is a parallel to that. And, you know, what Skip and his team has done over the years with our processes is what we call job instruction. You know, it is, you're right. You know, one of the other, I think, unintended consequence of not knowing how we do what we do is when we have turnover, we lose that institutional knowledge. You know, yes. It's there, but it's never memorialized. So when that person is gone, we struggle to, have a good process. You know, one of the other things I wanted to ask you is when you mentioned about, you know, that around the flow of information particularly, but it's that push and pull. So as you said, in, you know, the next person knowing that information, it's pushed out to them, the right information, the right person, actionable information. But one of the other struggle, and you know, I want to know your thoughts on how we can work, improve on that, is what is an acceptable wait time versus what is not normal wait time. So, and that's where the pull needs to come in. So if I did not get this information in reasonable time, has to be defined, but how do we create that, you know, not only just the push, but pull of information when it's outside of the normal variation?
You know, this is a really good segue for our next planned get together, but I'll address it in brief, because one of the things I talk to all organizations about is, how do you measure capacity? How do you know your capacity? Because if you don't have a way to measure your capacity with some level of accuracy and comfort, and appreciate you're in a system that's not linear and predictable like a factory, nor should it be, then you can't really understand how you can cope with demand. Now, push versus pull is a big debate I have, especially in the software delivery world and anything to do with information and knowledge work, because a pull system really, you know, a la Toyota, is where all the demand comes from the order process, from the customers, customer demand, and everything then moves right to left. The way I sometimes describe a pull system, you start at the end and you end at the start. But most systems, including software development, and I would warrant probably healthcare, even though when the customer walks in, the patient walks in, whether they're admitted as an emergency or as a planned admission or whatever, or outpatient, there is a pull from the patient. The majority of the way that work is being done is pushed. This pushes the next thing, pushes the next thing. So that's when you get into this, you know, a lot of debate about work in process or work in progress limits, WIP limits. Now, a Kanban, a true pull system that Toyota pioneered, which they call their Kanban system, a just-in-time system, is self-regulating. The system can't overconsume. It can't be overutilized. Now, that may or may not be even feasible in the type of work we're talking about here. So what we need to do is look at how we regulate, and I've just been working with some colleagues in industry on this from the software perspective, how we regulate the consumption of the capacity. And rather than just keep shoving, and there's an old adage someone in the software industry used years ago, shoving more paper in the printer to make it print faster doesn't work. So just because you keep pushing more patients, more requirements, more demands on the healthcare system, the doctors and nurses and other medical professionals can't just do more. There is only a certain amount of hours in the day. And as we are humans, we're not machines. So we get tired, we make mistakes, and we have to do rework. And of course, rework is akin to defects. So we've done something that didn't work. We did the wrong thing. Now we have to go redo it. So that's waste in itself. So overutilizing the system leads to more of that. So we first of all have to understand how we can measure our capacity. We then have to understand, how do we manage the demand on that capacity, and how do we say no? Now, you're not going to say no to a trauma case or something of that nature. And the UK is a great example of how not to do waiting lists and queuing theory, which is dreadful. You know, elective procedures can take 2 years for a hip replacement. That's not really ideal. I mean, in the US, you can get a hip replacement in 4 weeks typically, but, you know, there's a cost associated with doing that. So we have to be able to understand capacity and how we manage that capacity with the demand on that capacity. And that's when we get into, how do we manage the flow through the system? And this, I think we can dig into this probably a lot more next time we have a conversation, because it is a deep topic, and there's problems with using lean measures and metrics in a complex adaptive system. So we have to look at, what can we use as standardized measures and metrics, and what can't we use, and how do we address that to understand our capacity, and the demand on the system, and how we manage that capacity to deliver the maximum output based on the demand of that capacity. And that gets into quality, because this volume of work doing work, and then this quality of work. So you can increase volume without increasing quality. This is what we call output versus outcome. And we really focus on patient outcomes, not how many patients we can flow through the system. Although yeah. I guarantee the people who care about the money care about the latter, not the former.
Absolutely. Well, Nigel and Dr. Kothari, what a great conversation we've had. We've got a lot more to talk about next week. And, you know, just for our listeners out there, we're, you know, little teaser for you. Next week, Nigel, I want us to touch on Nigel's Law and how it relates to complex adaptive systems and flow of information. And so we're not going to talk about it today, but you'll have to tune in next week, guys, to hear about Nigel's Law. Once again, Nigel, thank you very much on behalf of Baptist for being here, and we look forward to seeing you again next week.
Thank you. I appreciate it.